This review shiur covers three topics. The first one is mitzvos tzrichos kavana, which is the idea that you need to concentrate on certain things when you're doing mitzvos. The second topic is minhagim, and the third topic is davening in English. About mitzvos tzrichos kavana. So there are four types of kavana that are discussed in the poskim. The most basic type of kavana is concentrating that I'm doing this because Hashem told me to. Okay, then there's three additional types of kavana. One of them is if you're saying something like Shema or Shmon Esrei, concentrating on what the words mean, on the translation of what you're saying, that's a second type of kavana. A third type of kavana is concentrating on the message, right, of what you're doing, such as when you put on tefillin and you concentrate that it means that I'm supposed to devote my heart and my brain to Hashem, or when I put on tzitzis and concentrate that it reminds me to do all the mitzvos, or when I eat matzah at the Seder and it reminds me, right, that our ancestors' dough didn't have time to rise. It's a third type of kavana. And the fourth type of kavana is unique to Shmoneh Esrei, and that is concentrating that you are in a meeting with Hashem. When poskim talk about mitzvos tzrichos kavana, they're talking about the basic kavana, the basic, the first one that we mentioned, which is, I'm doing this because Hashem told me to. How does this apply to Kriyat Shema? So when we say that Kriyat Shema is a mitzvah, and mitzvos need kavana, right? That means that when you say the pasuk of Shema, you should have in mind, I'm saying this pasuk because Hashem told me to say it. And if you didn't have that in mind, then you might have to repeat Shema. In fact, you do have to repeat Shema, unless you're saying it in shul. That's how it applies to Kriya Shema. The Mishnah Brura says that all mitzvos need kavana. So whether it's Shema, I have to have in mind, I'm saying Shema because Hashem told me to. When you're giving tzedakah to get the mitzvah, I'm giving tzedakah because Hashem told me to. Right? When you're saying Kiddush on Shabbos, I'm saying Kiddush because Hashem told me to. When I count Sfiras HaOmer, I'm counting Sfiras HaOmer because Hashem told me to. That's something that a person should have in mind before he does any mitzvah. In order for that mitzvah to count, that's what the Mishnah Brura says. The Mishnah Brura points out that when it comes to tzitzis, this generates a very interesting concern, namely that you're not allowed to wear a four-cornered garment without fulfilling the mitzvah of tzitzis. So he says, so what happens? You put on a four-cornered garment. What if you don't have in mind that you're doing that because Hashem told you to? So then you're wearing a four-cornered garment without getting the mitzvah of tzitzis, which is an aveira. You can't wear a four-cornered garment without fulfilling the mitzvah of tzitzis. And so to that, the Mishnah Brura says, well, if you say a bracha before you do a mitzvah, that counts as kavana. Because what do we say in a bracha? Right? Thank you, Hashem, that you made a special, right, by giving us mitzvos, commandments, instructions, and you commanded, instructed, told us to, right, do this particular mitzvah. And so the bracha itself, right, basically is a declaration of I'm doing the mitzvah because Hashem told me to. So when I make a bracha before I put on the tzitzis, that is basically saying I'm putting on tzitzis because Hashem told me to. If I don't make a bracha and I don't have in mind, concentrate that I'm doing it because Hashem told me to, so then putting on the tzitzis could be an aveira rather than a mitzvah. Now, it's puzzling. The Rambam seems to contradict himself when he talks about mitzvos tzrichos kavana. In one place, he says that if somebody stuffs matzah down your throat and you're not at all concentrating on doing the mitzvah, you still get the mitzvah, even though you did it without concentration, just if you're totally taken aback, this guy is stuffing matzah down your throat, you get the mitzvah, the Rambam says, even without kavana. However, when it comes to shofar, the Rambam says that if you listen to the shofar, or if you hear the shofar without concentrating, I'm doing this because Hashem told me to, you don't get the mitzvah, says the Rambam, and you need to listen to shofar again. So which one is it? Does he say that mitzvos need kavana or that mitzvos don't need kavana? So Rashi makes a suggestion, which some achronim apply to the Rambam. And Rashi says that mitzvos sometimes do need kavana and sometimes don't need kavana. Perhaps if it's a mitzvah that you enjoy, like a eating food mitzvah, so then it does not need kavana, because we engage much more intensely with mitzvos that we enjoy. On the other hand, if it's not necessarily an enjoyable mitzvah, so then we would need kavana in order to fulfill the mitzvah, and that's why matzah, which is a food-eating mitzvah, I enjoy it, so I don't need kavana. Shofar is not an eating mitzvah. My stomach doesn't feel more full after I listen to the shofar, and that's perhaps why shofar would need kavana. The Pri Chadash gives a similar distinction, and he says that an active mitzvah does not need kavana, because if I'm acting, if I'm doing something, if I'm moving, then I'm engaged with the mitzvah. A passive mitzvah would require kavana. And again, when it comes to matzah, I'm chewing it and I'm swallowing it. There's an action, so I'm already engaged, and I don't need kavana. Shofar is passive. I don't have to move to hear the shofar. And therefore, it would need kavana in order to up my level of engagement. The Pri Chadash makes a different compromise, not with reference to the Rambam, but he, seems to paskin. Sorry, the Magen Avraham makes a different distinction. Again, not with reference to the Rambam, but in connection with mitzvos in general. He suggests that mitzvos de'oraisa, right, mitzvos that are written in the Torah, mitzvos that date back, to the year 2448, right, when the Jews stood at the foot of Har Sinai, those mitzvos need kavana. Whereas mitzvos derabanan, which date, to later, legislation, by the rabbis, which are not recorded explicitly in Chumash, he says that those do not need kavana. Again, the Mishneh Berurah paskins against the Magen Avraham. Mishneh Berurah paskins that all mitzvos need kavana, whether they're enjoyable or not, whether they're active or passive, whether they're d'oraisa or whether they're d'rabbanan, they always need kavana. The only exceptions, he says, are if you make a bracha before you do the mitzvah, that counts as if you had kavana, right? Or if you do the mitzvah, right, in a setting, an environment, an ambiance, which makes it clear, right, that you're doing it because Hashem told you to, then that also counts in place of kavana. So, for example, he says, if you're dressed in your talis and tefillin and standing in a shul and saying Shema, like, obviously, the setting, what you're wearing and what's around you, right, makes it clear that you're saying Shema because Hashem told you to. And therefore, it says, if you had kavana, you don't have to necessarily think the words to yourself, I'm saying Shema because Hashem told me to. But if you're saying Shema at night at home, then you would need to have in mind to concentrate, I'm doing it because Hashem told me to, because, there's no setting around me that that basically reminds me of that idea. Moving on to the second topic, the topic of Minhagim. So we introduced, or the Mishneh Berurah introduced this topic by talking about piyutim. And piyutim are poems that are often said in the middle of Chazaras Hashatz, in the middle of Birchos Kriyas Shema. They're similar to pizmonim. They go by other names in other communities, but it's basically is poems that are said in the middle of Chazaras Hashatz and Birchos Kriyas Shema. And Rav Chaim Vital, when he davened as a private individual, he would not say piyutim. I know this is out of order on the question sheet. The next question on the sheet is, when he was the chazan, he would say piyutim. When he was a private individual, he would not say piyutim. Please don't get those mixed up. He opposed piyutim for multiple reasons. Some of them he felt, would be interruptions in the middle of the brachos, if they weren't, on the theme of the bracha. Some of them he felt, didn't really capture the essence of the holiday, were occasion, that they were meant, to capture, and various other reasons as well. So again, as a private individual, he wouldn't say piyutim, but when he was the chazan and leading the shul, he would say piyutim. And from here we learn two things. Number one, that when you're the chazan, you should follow the minhag of the shul that you're davening for. And number two, that even if your minhag is different from the minhag of the shul where you're the chazan, doesn't mean you shouldn't volunteer to be the chazan. It's okay for a Sfardi to volunteer to be the chazan in an Ashkenazi shul, or someone who's Chabad to volunteer to be the chazan, right, in Nusach Ashkenaz Minyan. And even though that means that they're going to daven a little bit differently, from their Nusach, it's not necessarily a reason to decline being a chazan. Reb Chaim Vital was an incredible tzaddik and Talmud Chacham, and nonetheless, he would daven for a minyan where the minhag about piyutim was different than his own, and he would say it their way. And he wouldn't just say, "Oh, I can't be chazan because it's a different minhag from mine." In general, when your family minhag is different from the shul minhag, there are many opinions in poskim, but I think that the general, the stronger opinion, right, is that everything that's public, you should do like the shul, or like the minyan where you're davening. So, obviously, if you're chazan, everything that you say out loud is public. Kedusha is something that's said out loud, and so you should do whatever the shul does, whether it's, nakdishach, or whether it's nakdishcha, nikadesh, whatever it is, you're saying it out loud, so say it like the shul is saying it. When it comes to the order of tachnun, right, and you daven, nusach svard, put your head down first and then stand up for v'hu rachum. Nusach Ashkenaz stands up first for v'hu rachum and then puts your head down, right? Svardim do ashamnu bagadu and beat their chest. It's very public. Right? Ashkenazim don't do that. If an Ashkenazi is davening in a Sfardi minyan, he should do that ashamnu bagadnu, because that's a public thing. And everything similar to that. The order of Aleinu and the Shir Shalyom, if it's public, you should do like the minyan, but everything that's private, like when you're davening the silent Shmona Esrei, you should daven that the way that your family davens. The particular words of Uhu Rachum that you're saying in Tachnon should be the words that's in your family's siddur. They're your family's minhags, siddur, because you're not saying that out loud. But the parts of davening that are said out loud should be done like the minyan where you're davening. What should you do if you come to a shul and all of the sidurim are the nusach of the shul and not your own? Should you not daven? No, you should daven, even though it's not your nusach, because it's better to daven and to daven from a siddur than to mess up the words trying to say your own nusach. That's okay to daven like a different nusach when those are the only things that the sidurim have, just like it's okay to diverge, to daven differently from your nusach when you are the chazan. Can a person change your nusach of tefillah? Can an Ashkenazi decide suddenly to become a Sfardi, or a Sfardi decide to become an Ashkenazi? The answer is, the Mishnah Berurah says no, that everybody should stay with the nusach of his family, with the nusach of his community. According to the Mishnah Berurah, when would a minhag be illegitimate? In other words, when would a minhag not be binding? And the answer to that is, if the Gemara goes against the minhag, or the minhag goes against something that's clear in a Gemara, nobody, no community, no family has permission, right, to go against the Gemara. The Gemara was voted on by every Jewish community in the world. And therefore, after the Gemara was sealed, nothing can go against it. So a minhag that goes against the Gemara would not be legitimate and would not have to be followed. What is the historical origin of the different nusach hatfilas? So the Sfardi nusach hatfila traces its way back obviously to Spain before the expulsion in 1492. And how did the minhag get to Spain? So it came to Spain from the Gaonim in Bavel. The story goes is that four students of the Gaonim were on a boat and they were kidnapped by pirates. And then they were sold to different communities on the coast of North Africa, Kairouan and other places. And, you know, so one of those was Rabbeinu Hushiel, who was the father of Rabbeinu Hananel, who was the Rebbe of the Rif, who was the Rebbe of the Rinagash, who was the Rebbe of Rabbi Maimon, who was the Rebbe, the father and the Rebbe of the Rambam. And the Rambam, obviously, was, you know, the fountainhead of all Sfardi, Psak Halacha and customs. And so really traces its way straight back to the Gaonim, to the Amoraim, to the Tanaim, in a very uninterrupted chain. The Ashkenazi Nosach HaTfila traces its way back to the Clonimus family from Italy, where the idea basically is that during the times of the Beis HaMikdash, there were great Talmidei Chachamim who established a community in Italy. I guess when Israel was under control of the Roman Empire and they needed to be, you know, competent Jews who were living close to the seat of power, they established a community there. And there were great chachamim in that Clonimus family. And even after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and even after the fall of the Roman Empire, this family continued to live in Italy. And eventually, as more and more Jews moved into Europe, into Germany, and into France, and other countries around there, they needed rabbis, and so they sent and they invited people from the Clonimus family to settle in their communities. And that's really the origin of Nusach Ashkenaz. It traces its way back to Italy, to the Clonimus family, who had come there in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. And finally, the historical origin of the Nusach Ari. So the Mishnah Brura brings down that every Shevet in the times of the Beis HaMikdash had their own Nusach of davening, their own gate of, you know, for their prayers to go through in heaven. And the Ari was concerned that people nowadays do not know what Shevet they're from. You know, are you from Shevet Yehuda or Shevet Binyamin? Or maybe you're from Shevet Naphtali or Shevet Dan. People don't know what Shevet they're from. And so he created a Nusach HaTfila, which he said will go in to any gate of prayer in heaven, so that no matter what Shevet you're from, if you daven that Nusach, it's going to go through your Shevet's gate in heaven. It's like the master key that opens up any lock. And that was, you know, the motive, you know, that informed the Arizal when he created Nusach Ari. So even though historically we know that it's only about, you know, 500 years old, but it has this advantage that it's a master key that works, you know, for every Shevet. And this informs the Piskei Halacha of different poskim in terms of changing the Nusach HaTfila. Again, remember, the Mishnah Brura says that you can never change your Nusach HaTfila, but other poskim argue. So, for example, Chacham Ovadia Yosef paskins that anybody can change their Nusach to the Sfardi type of davening. He says because the Sfardi type of davening is the most ancient, and since there were the fewest exiles, the Sfardim, you know, spent such a long time. It was basically Bavel, and then Spain, and then, you know, one other place, and then Israel. So over 2,000 years, there were only about three upheavals and exiles. And so chances are that they remember best, you know, how we used to daven in the Beis HaMikdash. And so Chacham Ovadia Yosef says that anybody can change their davening to the Sfardi davening. Reb Moshe Feinstein, on behalf of the Misnagdim, you know, says that anybody who davens Nusach Ari can switch to Nusach Ashkenaz, because he says Nusach Ashkenaz is much older. If you daven Nusach Ari, 500 years ago, your ancestors were davening Nusach Ashkenaz. So he says, if you want to, you could just go back to what your ancestors did 500 years ago. Again, the Mishneh Berurah disagrees. The Mishneh Berurah says it's true that 500 years ago, your ancestors may have been doing something, but for 300, 400 years, your ancestors were doing something different. And so now you've got to follow, what's been in your family for 400 years. According to Hasidim, they argue that anyone can switch to Nusach Ari, because they say Nusach Ari is the Nusach HaKolel. It works for every Shevet. It's the master key. So no matter what community you belong to, they say, Nusach Ari will work for you. Again, practically, the Mishneh Berurah says that nobody can change their Nusach, and everybody should just stick with what their family davens. And this brings us to the last topic, davening in English. And the Mishneh Berurah says that there are seven prayers, there's more than seven, but he just picks seven examples that can be said in English, and those are Shema, Shmona Esrei, Birchas Hamazon, Kiddush, Brachos on Mitzvos, Brachos on Food, and Halil. The Mishneh Berurah then gives two cases when these Brachos cannot be said in English. He says, number one, if you don't understand English, then you can't say these brachos in English. It only works for people who understand the language that they're saying the bracha or the tefillah in. And the second thing is that the people in the city where you're davening also have to understand English. So that means that an Israeli in America cannot daven in English if that Israeli doesn't understand English. And an American in Israel cannot daven in English because most Israelis don't understand English. It's only an American in America who can daven in English because he understands English and the people where he's davening also understand English. The Mishneh Berurah talks then about the difficulty of translating words from Hebrew, particularly from Biblical and Rabbinic Hebrew, into English. He points out that the word vishinantam has at least two translations. One of them means you should teach vishinantam levanecha, you should teach Torah to your children. Right? Also, it could mean you should make Torah, your children know Torah so well that it'll flow off their tongue. You should make them really sharp in Torah. Teach them thoroughly. And the Mishneh Berurah says that there's other words also that we have difficulty translating exactly because they either, there's no English equivalent that preserves all of the meanings and connotations. He says the word S doesn't have a good English translation. The word Vishinantam, it's very, very hard to translate into English in a way that captures really everything that the Hebrew word Vishinantam tells us. And also the word Litotafos. It's a very hard word to translate into English. And because of this, the Mishneh Berurah says, we are discouraged from praying in English because we're nervous that we're not going to translate things properly or we won't know the translation. And that's why he says it's better to pray in Hebrew. He says in Hebrew, even if you don't understand what you're saying, you fulfill the mitzvah of prayer, you fulfill the mitzvah to make a bracha in English, if you translate it wrong, so then, maybe you don't. And so therefore he says it's better to say it in Hebrew without understanding than to say it in English with understanding. However, a person who has difficulty reading Hebrew, meaning you can't even say it in Hebrew without understanding, so for such a person, it is sometimes appropriate to daven or make brachos in English, right? If a person can't read Shema or can't memorize the syllables of Shema, then don't just say nothing. Better say it in English. But this brings us to the Chasam Sofer. And the Chasam Sofer says it is forbidden to daven in English if you basically do it forever. It's only okay to do it on a temporary basis. So in other words, a person who has difficulty reading Hebrew, they can say, look, I have a plan, okay? I'm a busy man, I'm busy studying, I'm busy working, but I'm going to work for 10 minutes every night. to improve my Hebrew reading, or to memorize, how, the syllables, right, of davening. And, eventually, right, after 1 year or 5 years of working on it a little bit every day, eventually I'll get there. And, after maybe 2 months, I'll be able to say Shema by heart, or I'll be able to read Shema fluently. Right? After a year, I'll be able to do Shema, right, and Shmoneh Esrei, whatever the timeline is, he says. It can't just be I give up on Hebrew and I'm going to spend the rest of my life davening in English. It needs to be done only on a temporary basis, and a person's always got to be working in terms of mastering the Hebrew pronunciation of the davening. The Chasam Sofer proves this based on the Psukim in Sefer Ezra. It says in Sefer Ezra that most of the Jews who returned to Israel with the Shivas Tzion in the times of the second Beis HaMikdash, they didn't understand Hebrew. And therefore, it says that when Ezra made a gigantic ceremony to read and reacquaint the people with Torah, that basically he read Chumash in Hebrew and he translated it into the vernacular, into the language that most of the people spoke. And in spite of that, when Ezra composed davening, he did that in Hebrew and not in the Aramaic, which the people spoke back then. So why not, right? If it's okay to just, daven in English or in a foreign language for people who don't understand Hebrew, then Ezra should have composed davening in the language that most of the people understood. So the Chasam Sofer says the reason he didn't do that is because everybody's got to work on davening in Hebrew, and and understanding, the Hebrew davening. And Ezra didn't want to set the bar low. He felt that people should work on mastering the Hebrew, and so he made the davening in Hebrew. So the same thing applies nowadays that if Ezra lived nowadays also, he wouldn't just say, okay, we'll make davening in English. He didn't do that back then, and he wouldn't do that nowadays. He would say, look, if you can't read the Hebrew, then daven in English, but work on every day, work on getting another word, another pasuk, another page, whatever it is, in Hebrew, and eventually, after a few months, a few years, you'll be able to do everything the proper way. Another topic. If you already read Shema and you hear the minyan saying it, what should you do and why? So the rule is that for Shema and Ashrei and Aleinu, if you're in a place where the minyan is saying those things, you should say it along with them. There's two reasons for this. By Shema, the reason that we do this is because we want to look like we agree with what the minyan is saying, right? Shema is our pledge of allegiance, right? We say Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem who created the world is our God, and we're going to, try to, be loyal to His values, and to follow His instructions. That's what Hashem Elokeinu means. And if everyone is saying it and you don't, it looks almost like you disagree, like you're not pledging allegiance. And we don't want to give that impression. So we say Shema together with the minyan. Ashrei and Aleinu, which are not exactly pledges of allegiance, the reason to say them with the minyan is because of Derech Eretz. It's good manners, it's civilized behavior that when the people around you are doing something good, you should join them and contribute, your voice, so to speak. To doing the same good thing that the people around you are doing. That's Derech Eretz. But again, let's say that you daven Ashrei more slowly than the people around you, so then you don't have to finish Ashrei. Just as long as they're saying Ashrei, you should also be saying Ashrei. As long as they're saying Aleinu, you should also be saying Aleinu. Again, we're talking about a person who already said it. So say it again. As long as they're saying it, because when people around you are doing something good, you should also do that same good thing and join them, and that's Derech Eretz. The words Poseach es yadecha u'maspia lechol chai ratzon, that means Hashem, you open up your hands and you satisfy all living things with what they desire. And that's the main pasuk in Psukei de Zimra. We talked Shmoneh Esrei is a meeting with Hashem, and before you go into an important meeting, you read up. Who are you meeting with? Right? Why is this meeting important? You're asking somebody for a $1 billion donation, right, to your institution. Right? Who is this guy? Right? What excites him about your institution? What's his background that he has $1 billion to donate to you? You want to familiarize with yourself, with who you're meeting with. Psuki de Zimra, it's all about reminding ourselves, for who we're about to meet with. But the essential thing is, Poseach es yadecha u'maspia l'chalchai ratzon. We're meeting with somebody who can give us everything that we desire. And we're meeting with the one, right, who gave us everything that we like in life. And so that's just something, the most important thing, in all of Psuki de Zimra. The practical halachos that emerge from this are threefold. Number one, a person, you need to concentrate when you say Poseach es yadecha. Even if you space out for the rest of Psuki de Zimra, or even if you don't know what the words of the rest of Psuki de Zimra mean, you need to understand what the words of Poseach es yadecha, u'maspia l'cholchai ratzon, it's seven words, you need to know the translation of those words, and you need to be concentrating on the translation of those words when you say them. The second practical halacha is that if you didn't concentrate, you need to go back and say Poseach es yadecha again. If there's enough time, say Poseach es yadecha, and then just continue Psuki de Zimra from there. Tzadik Hashem b'chol, right, etc. Just continue from there. If you don't have enough time and you're going to miss Shmoneh Esrei with the minyan, then just say Poseach es yadecha alone, and then go to Yishtabach. But if you said it without concentrating, you would have to go back and say it again. And finally, the third halacha is that if you don't have time to say all of Psuki de Zimra, you should at least say Ashrei. That's the most important thing to say. If you're skipping everything else, you shouldn't skip Ashrei because it's got Poseach es yadecha in it. By Mincha time, if you don't have time for all of Ashrei, then, skip Ashrei, say it after Mincha, but at least say Poseach es yadecha before you start Shmoneh Esrei. And that is the three practical halachos that have to do with Poseach es yadecha because it's the most important part of davening. The same thing by Shema. The most important pasuk of Shema is the first one, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Practically, you have to concentrate on what those words mean, right? What does it mean, Hashem Elokeinu, right? It means that Hashem who created the world is my God, right? And I am devoted, dedicated, right, to his values, and to spreading his values in the world. That's called Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shamayim, right? Hashem Echad, Hashem is one, right? There's no other, God or power, in the world. Hashem is simple, right? You can't split him up into parts. That's why Hashem can't have, a body. These are all things to concentrate on in the first pasuk of Shema. And if you said Shema without having the basic concentration, Hashem, right, is, omni, present, right, he's eternal, he was, is, and will be. Again, if you don't have the basic concentration on what the words mean of that first pasuk of Shema, then you would have to say the pasuk again in order to get the mitzvah. And by Shmoneh Esrei, the most important part is the first bracha, right, from Elokeinu v'Elokei Avosinu, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, until Baruch Atah Hashem, Magein Avraham. And again, the practical halacha that emerges from this is that you have to concentrate when you say it. You don't go, you have to concentrate on the words. When you say them, concentrate on what the words mean.